How's it going?
All good, bro.
Dude, thank you so much for having me on your terrace. You know, I think, honestly, I'm going to claim it. This is the best view in town.
Thank you, bro.
One of the best ones, at least.
Thank you, bro. Thank you.
How's it been growing up here?
It's amazing, bro. It's a blessing. It's a blessing, really. It took me a bit time before to understand it and to get it. And I had to go away from here and to be away from it for a while to understand really the value of this area and everything. And that the value of the ways, the nature, the weather, everything we have, even the mentality, the people and everything. So it's really, really amazing. I'm really blessed that I grew up in here, and I'm really lucky, I think.
So tell me, when you were a little boy, right, did you grow up here in Tamrat or Agadir? Well, we're in Tamrat, Agadir, Tagazu. It's kind of like a melting pot, right? It's all kind
exactly
of like together. So tell me about your fondest memories of like growing up here as a little kid. Like what did young Tariq do?
Well, the thing is, to be honest, is that I as I said, I'm blessed because Agadir, when I was a kid, everyone that comes from around Morocco, from north and everything, for them it was like California, because it was a really small city. It was super touristic already, in a big scale, while the city was small, many hotels, many clubs, many restaurants. So even living in Morocco, we were living another world, actually, like living in abroad.
Right.
So, which made us meeting many Europeans from early age and having been connected with different mentalities, with different religions, with different beliefs, with different customs and habits and everything. So it made us in one way more open-minded, I think, and that we experienced things. And that made me moving around with people. And that made me actually seeing some friends, old friends, older than me, that became actually friends with time, that they were surfing. And me, I couldn't afford a board. I mean, that was for me like a dream, seeing the boards going in front of me. I'm like, wow, you know? And by accident, I got a bodyboard.
Who gave you your really, first board? Do you remember?
I mean, surfboard, you mean? Or no.
Bodyboard, I mean, like how
Bodyboard. I had a friend called Aziz Al-Lali. They were quite wealthy family. And they had at the time it was like the best you can have. So it was this bodyboard with foam that had kite, like two fins.
Right.
Beneath that okay. You could screw off. And at the beginning I used that bodyboard with the fins. And then
as a bodyboard or as a surfboard?
As a bodyboard.
Right, yeah, I got you.
And then I saw some videos of bodyboarders for real, and I saw that they didn't have fins and that they could do the 360s and everything. So I took off the fins from that bodyboard, but it was like a biscuit, not hard at all, you know, the thing was like moving every way. It was like a really bad one. But still, I managed to do 360s with it. And I started going to the beach often. And that's how I started seeing these guys that became my friends, that was going through with surfboards. And one day, a friend of mine named Adil Sehli, that gave me a bodyboard, was professional. Like, beneath it, it was like a nice surface and everything. And that made me actually learning more about the waves and having a possibility to chill, to have fun with it. And then I started doing stand-ups on the bodyboard, having fun. And one day I met, I started becoming friends with a couple of friends from the area, from our neighborhood. And one guy called Kamal Wali, I was hanging with him and with other friends, and he told me, bro, why don't you surf? I'm like, I don't know, really, it's not. And he gave me his board. He's like, go and try. Bro, first wave, I paddled, I stood up, and then he told me, you shouldn't go back to bodyboard.
Did you ever go back, or that was it for you?
Actually, I used bodyboard. I used it again just to have fun. When if it's like waves, like run, not okay. But right after that, I started looking for a bodyboard when he told me that, because I really wanted to surf. Yeah, it's just that for me, it was far way to reach. For me, it was like far. It was like the price of the bodyboard, of the board and everything. It was like almost impossible. But the second that guy that was like for us one of the best surfers at the area, he told me, bro, you have it, you need to get a board. I'm like, okay, if he told me that, I should get a board, you know, because for me he was like the respected surfer in the area. So I was looking for a board, and then I found a board, Natural Art.
Okay.
And it was for 500 dirhams. And for me, 500 dirhams at the time, I'm like, damn.
How old were you,
bro?
How old were you when you got your first board?
I think I was around 14.
14. Okay.
14, 15.
What did you do to get 500 dirhams? Were you like stealing from?
I couldn't steal
from your uncle or whatever. Or were you actually working?
Stealing,
you know, your
stealing
ass off?
From your uncle or whatever at the time at that age. If I did something like that, I would have been kicked like hell, and I would have been sure that I could not have put my feet out to play or to do whatever, but for school.
Right.
That's it. Right. So no. My dad really. Today the education he gave me, that's what made me who I am today, you know. People can trust me and everything, so that's good, that's amazing. And I couldn't, no, but I had to go and beg my dad like hell. And luckily for me, he knew the family of some of the first generation of surfers, like older, really older than me. So he went to talk to them, and it's them that told him about the board for 500 dirhams. And we bought it for 500 dirhams. I don't know how until today my dad, he really went with that, but he paid the 500 dirhams for me. And I'm thanking him for that, for real. So I bought that Natural Art, and it was an amazing board with channels on it. And right away, I took the board. It was the start of summer holidays. I went straight to Devil's Rock with the Telt Canadian. At the time, it was not even the igloo yet, didn't exist.
Yeah.
And bro, I was alone there, sleeping, putting the leash on my board and putting it by my side in there so that if ever someone come to steal it, he will drag me with it. And I'm not kidding, I had a baseball bat that was almost the half of my size at the time, that I was hanging to every night, just in case something.
So you basically slept right out front, like
right in front.
People don't see it, right? But like we're literally looking at Devil's Rock, like right out front.
Exactly, bro. But at the time, it wasn't like this.
So tell me about the time, like how many years are we talking? We're talking about
that's 30 years, maybe. At least that's at we are talking at the 90s.
So what was the area like back then?
Wow, bro, no light, no electricity,
right?
No running water, nothing, nada. If you arrive here at the time, it's like you are really away from everything. I mean, you needed to get with you a couple of jars of water, like plastic bottles of water. You needed to get with you most of the things you need to eat and survive. I mean,
Any roads? Like, because right now I'm very surprised, right? Like, I was here when I was 14, which is also 20 years ago, right?
Exactly.
And it looks very, very different to now, right? Like, there was no roads. There was running water. I'm pretty sure there was running water at the time. But, I mean, the place has gone through a transformation.
Amazing.
That's just crazy and really, really fast as well. So if you're looking back now, like, how do you see this place, or did you see this place evolve?
Well, to be honest, I didn't see that it will change radically like this, especially not the kind of constructions that are around, because I think it's a bit too much for the area, and that made it losing a bit of its beauty too, because that's not the kind of constructions that had to be around here.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
And especially if we are promoting for surfing and for surfers and for the waves and the beauty of this weather, we could have done it in another way, I think. And as I said, me that lived here from a young age and I saw the area how it was, and I've been around the world a bit and I see that other places, they do protect the nature and the beauty of nature, and we did quite the opposite. It's a bit sad, but hopefully they will not kill everything, because I think that they are a bit aware about it now and about the importance of surfing, the waves and everything around it. So they're gonna, I think they are starting getting ready, I mean, understanding the thing. So they're gonna, I think the next projects and everything that will come in the future, they will not be as exaggerated as this.
I mean, the place literally, you know, breathes surfing. I mean, if you look out of here, straight out front, you have from all the way to the south to all the way up north, you probably have like 15 spots or even more, probably.
Bro.
Like unnamed spots as well, right, that people don't know about.
Exactly.
And so this area is all about surfing. So I wonder, like, how was that for you? Like, when did you actually realize that this area, man, people from all over the world actually travel here to surf? Like, how was that for you? Was that something you realized very early? Or was that something you kind of didn't even realize? It was just kind of like, for you, you know, this is just what it is, right? Like, you grew up here, you saw the waves, you grew up with the waves. Is that something that you were aware of? Or was this kind of like, oh, crazy, we live in an area that people actually want to travel to surf?
Well, as I told you, this area here, it was touristic from before, but not for surfing. People love the weather and everything. So many Scandinavian, German people, and this from the 70s and 80s, it was like a really a main destination. But me, when I started surfing, I mean, I already found it a evolution of surfing around the area, because already we had a big concentration the start of the surfing in here, it was after that some American passed through, like military, that been based in up north in Mohammedia, in Mehdia, oh, yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. And then when they were coming south here, going south for a couple of missions in the desert,
when
they went
that?
Through
do you,
here.
Do you know that?
Sorry?
When was that? Do you know?
It's at the start of the 70s, something
right, okay.
like this. And when these people saw the waves, then they talked about it, and then right after, at the end of the 70s, I think, or in the mid 70s, the first main, like, official people that came to surf the wave, looking for the surf, was hippies from the state, from Australia, from New Zealand, and these guys, they came with their vans, you know, and they came to stay here for 5-6 months, not only a week or two. And every surfer that I met at that time in the water, it's a surfer.
Right.
It's a decent surfer. He's hooked. If he took his truck and he traveled many months and he went through hell, and the roads at the time, it's not as easy. The yeah. borders, everything. So these guys, they were real surfers. I mean, passionate for real. And at the time, the surf was different, because when you are in the water, it's only passionate people.
Yeah.
Everyone in the water was loving surf for surf. And at the time, you didn't choose surfing because of Facebook or because of Instagram or whatever. Nobody sees you except you and your friends with you in the water.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was not a way to show off neither.
Yeah, I got you.
No, it was a thing for us to prove something for ourselves. It was a way to relax. It was a way to have... a challenge and a way to for us to be free, you know. So it was amazing, and in the water, the vibes in the water was different too. I mean, it was a concurrence, but a positive one. I mean, if my friend hit the lip at noon, me, I will tell him I will put it right here, you know.
It's like a healthy competition.
Healthy competition, you know. At the time we didn't have no DVDs, nothing. We could find maybe one surf magazine that we hooked up from a European that was here. Bro, it will go around the whole city and everyone will see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And at the time we had the tape, the GVS, you know?
Yeah.
Bro, we watched it and we watched it. And of course you had favorite parts of the thing that sometimes you want to see it and it was just like, because you saw it so many times.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. That tape, it was like gold. You didn't want that many knows about it, so that you don't borrow it. And if you borrow it, you have to get it back right away. Today, videos are everywhere in this. Boards, bro. It was hell to get your own board. And if you break a fin to repair it, and we didn't have no reason, no nothing. But still, we were passionate. We fight it. We did everything to keep surfing. So the surf at that time, it was sweet.
So
today, it have changed, because what we were saying is that the development made it today. People knew that it became a touristic attraction, you know, something that people want to try, because today, if you put your TV on, I'm sure if there is a 3 minute of publicity, at least a perfume brand or a car brand or whatever, you will see a surfboard going through or a wave or whatever.
Yeah.
So today surfing,
it has exploded in popularity.
Everywhere,
for sure.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And you see it yourself these days, even when there is no waves, the water is packed.
So I want to touch on this, right? Like, so you've been here from the very beginning, right? So you've seen it. But you're also on the other side, right? So, and I can see that you're getting nostalgic about this, right? You're kind of missing that time. But at the same time, you're also a surf coach now, right?
Yeah.
So how does you know, the two worlds, do they sometimes clash?
They did and they do.
Okay.
I'm a coach, so I want always to do my coaching in perfect conditions. And that the people I'm coaching, that they really move forward, and so that they can move forward, they need to surf in peace, in one way, in a safe entourage.
Which is very hard.
Which is very hard, especially when there is many people. And then when there is too many people, I mean, he will have less chance to have waves. And when he get waves, you have more possibility to have people on that wave being dropped by someone paddling back, whatever, so that you don't concentrate on your surfing 100% and you are not efficient, you don't give really.
You
see, even from my proper experience, when I want to progress on my surfing, I need to surf a wave with nobody on the wall, on the shoulder, and not with people in it. Because when I surf crowded peaks, then I need just to slalom, so I surf the wave as the possibility is, depending about where the people are. I don't hit the lip where I want really 100%.
Yeah.
So I'd rather go away to other places, maybe with less quality of wave, but less crowded. And then the person will take more waves and he will manage to surf. So today I have just to manage myself. I'm a local, luckily. I know about many different places. Sometimes I need maybe to drive a bit
further.
It's not a problem for me from the moment we're gonna do it in the right way. So that's the thing that now today it's a problematic in one way, because the fact that it's so much crowded and it's not well organized in one way, sometimes it really creates some chaos, especially when you have some surf instructors that are, sorry to say that, but irresponsible. So surfing is already extreme. It's an extreme sport. We don't need to make it more extreme, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
like, are you kind of mad or sad about it, that this area has grown so much? Or do you just kind of embrace it and think it's just part of the process? Or, like, how do you, like, what's your take on tourism, right, in this area? And the tourism that you guys are getting here is very targeted. It's very surf centric, right? Like, how do you feel about that as a local? Because yes, your waves are getting more crowded. You have to share with more people from all over the world.
Sure.
Some people, you know, they might not have the skill level to be out there, and they shouldn't be out there, right? So what's your take on that?
Well, for me, I mean, from the moment it's helping the area and helping the people of the area, people are mega, I mean, they are living from it. Of course, I can't be sad, because you can't have this without this, you see, you know?
Yeah.
So, but the only thing is that, as you said, the crowded is that we need to organize it. We need to have some rules, some principles to all the surf schools, they need to sit together down and have a way of running all this so that there is no chaos, that there is a communication between all these guys. We have a coastline who is so long that, come on.
Yeah.
We are not obliged to be really crowded. We have many places. Okay?
Yeah.
So it's just to be organized. But unluckily, again, even the tourists like to be with other people. They like to be in the crowd.
What's the herd and sheep, like the sheep mentality, right?
Yes, but then again, it's the coaches, the surf instructors that need to explain that for your safety, so that you really enjoy the surf session and to really go forward, you need to be in a place where there is less people, not crowded in this, you know? You can hang and chat with people when you are out, not in the water. Because when you are in the water, you should concentrate about your waves, about your board, about the other people and everything, not about sitting and chatting and talking, which is today, they need, again, to do a separation between the surfers who are coming just to experience the surfing and the ones who are really surfers and they want to develop their surf.
Yeah.
So you put these groups in a certain areas and the other one you take them to certain areas, because when you mix these two ones, no one enjoy the session.
Yeah.
And you put everyone in danger.
Yeah.
You see? So, and you find yourself, the instead of surfing, like for me, when I jump to the water, I find myself almost like a judge talking to people, be careful, and giving lessons in the water. Because sometimes people do some stupidities that are dangerous, and you come out all boiled, and then you look at the person and you see that he is shocked, and his eyes are coming out, and that he is freaking out, and you understand that he doesn't know a thing
about what's going on
and where he is and what's going on. So you can't go crazy on this guy, because you will just make it worse for him.
Yeah.
So then you come down and you just tell him, come here, Lana, and you find yourself almost coaching him without wanting that, like, come here, that is, and you take him and you tell him, look, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, and you have to explain to him. Most of the people are thankful.
You know, the amount of fun in the water, right? Like yesterday when we hung out, you said something really interesting, that if you have a crowded lineup, there's only so much fun that can go around, right? And if there's too many people in the water, then in the end, nobody has fun. Do you want to elaborate on that? Like what you meant yesterday when we talked off camera about this?
Yeah, bro, because this is, it's simple. It's every wave. It's characteristic, you know, and it will take certain amount of people. It will accept a certain amount of people. And as we said before, the surf is already an extreme sport, you see?
Yeah.
So when we jump to certain conditions, the people that are in the water, if there are few people that are connecting, there is a connection between each other, there is a communication between each other, they already surfed these conditions and they know how to communicate with the other surfers, they know about priorities, they know about everything, the session goes smooth.
Yeah.
And everyone have fun.
Yeah.
But the second the peak start getting full with different mentalities, some are going in to show off, some are going in to just be there as a floater. Some, they think they are in a contest, that make already a chaos and a bad vibe going in at the peak already. because you will be, instead of sitting, chilling, smiling, and when the surfer meet another surfer like a Shaka and like, what's up, bro, and this, it will be more like an electric look and like, yeah, next one is mine, mother, you know, like, and then the vibes start going not okay, and one drops on the other one, and one is pissed, and one been waiting for a while, and the other one don't respect and doesn't know about the priority, and at the end, nobody is having fun, and you jump to the water thinking about a positive moment that you're gonna come all full of good energy and good vibes and this, and then you come out pissed because seeing that surfing is going away from what it's been before, and that there is too many people that are jumping in the water, they are not interested at surf itself.
Do you think that's a problem of social media as well? Because like you see all these amazing spots, right? And they're so, well, more or less, right? They're quite easy to get to as well, especially in this area, right? Like if you think about Anchor Point, right? That's the holy grail of waves in the area. And if you look at the wave, it's actually really, really easy to get into the lineup. It's really easy. Yeah. Do you think, and this is kind of like what the social media is blasting about, right? Like you talk about the area, you talk about Tambra, you talk about Tagazoo, and in the conversation, there's always Anchor Point. So do you think social media and the way we use it as well has kind of, you know, added to the problem of overcrowding
lineups? Of course,
lineups?
Bro, when you say promotion, you mean crowd. You want that more people come here and knows about the place, you put it on a promotion, which means you promote for it, which means you're gonna put publicity for it on magazine or surf magazine, on websites and everything. And the big mistake right here, not only in Morocco, but around the world, and that's funny because I've talked about it many times. Whenever you see a publicity on a surf magazine, on whatever for surfing, you see this amazing, beautiful girl with a bikini, with a big smile, and on a wave and having fun, or even two, three people on the same wave going and chilling and having fun and smiling. And
that's
only that,
ever.
You see only this, the beauty and people having fun and wow. And that's what the people that are booking their ticket for surfing are expecting.
Yeah.
Because no one shows them the real deal, which means the
like
other
what
side
we
of surfing.
Like what we see today, you
the
know?
The big
like
waves,
it's unruly,
these conditions.
It's heavy, it's a
and
lot of work.
Show them wipeouts. Show them that not everyone is going like this and not everyone will manage to surf with a bikini.
Yeah, yeah.
You will have to have your wetsuit at the beginning. You jump with the bikini when you already know how to surf and you control everything. If you jump with a bikini the first session, you might end with no bikini. And that's not cool. I mean, that's irresponsible even to put someone with a bikini inside the water for the first sessions.
Yeah.
You know? So, when you promote for surfing, you need to promote the beauty of it, but the dangers that are around it, that it's an extreme sport, we don't forget about it. Luckily today, the technology made foamies. At my time, it was no foamies, bro. You learn with hard boards.
Yeah.
And you do a mistake, you remember it. Trust
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
So today, because we have the soft boards, we have many things, we made it easier to access to surfing. But then, as I said again, we don't talk enough about the dangers of surfing so that the people are aware. Even when the classes, when the courses are given on the beach, few people explain about security and many things about how to access, to teach them about the current, what to do, how to access to the water, the board, never between you and the wave, you know, don't go out, stay in a certain level, all these like small but important, that's the key. I mean, surfing is built from small details, you know, so I think that side, not many people talk about it, and it's a mistake because the people who are coming to surf, they should be aware about that too, and that they are going to do something extreme.
Let's go back to the area
yeah.
itself, right? if what would you tell people? What can they expect if they want to, if they're thinking about it, right? Coming to Tamrat or going to Tagazu? Like, what can people expect of the area, of the people, of the culture?
I mean, everywhere you go, you can find bad and good people. That we are sure about it. But luckily for us, this area is a touristic area, so everyone that is from the area is working for the good of the area. They live from it, you know? It's their bread. So no one play with their bread. So people here are really cool and really relaxed and chill, and they are like nice, they can help, they can, you know? Because already we Moroccans in our culture, we are like this. But then again, south here in Morocco, we are more chill and relaxed than north, you know? And we are a mix of Berber and Arabic, you know, which is make it more crazy mentality.
Actually, and explain the Berber culture, right, a little bit more, because that's very unique to the area as well, right? Just talk about the culture and what the differences are and like why it's so special.
Because actually, if people knows about the history of Africa and Morocco and this, the original resident of the whole North Africa are Berber, and then Arab came with Islam. You see, and then they got mixed, and that's why we have even Jewish Moroccans. Because when Islam came here, he find already Jewish in Morocco, he find already Christians, he will find Berber, and some Berber was Christian even, you know. And only when Islam came here, it turned people to Islam. And that's what make it a special country too, is that today when you go to the center of Agadir, you have a church, you have a cathedral, you know, a synagogue, yeah. And then you have mosques everywhere. So that's a crazy mix that made a crazy mentality, an open mentality, and I'm mixed. My mom, she is Berber, and my father is Arabic. So it's a crazy thing.
What's the unique thing about the Berber culture? Because, you know, when you look at surf movies, right, or when you look at Surf Mag, like when you read Surf Max or storytelling pieces about the area, the Berber culture is very prevalent. You know, it's always something that gets highlighted, and because it has its charm, right? It's like mystique charm.
For sure, just the village here, bro. When you go out, you will see it. The city is big, and if in the city today change, I can be living in a neighborhood in a neighborhood with 30 families in it, and maybe I will not know many of these families. Here, everyone knows me. I know everyone.
Yeah.
You see? In the afternoon, you will find all these old women sitting right in front of my house, looking to the sea and chilling. They have these habits. They all grow up as farmers or fishermen. So they have contact with nature. They are like, it's like countryside. When you say Berber people, they are like in the country. They don't live in the city. They live more in the nature. They have this kind of walls, natural walls. The houses they build is different too, you know. And then the food they will eat, it's more typical Moroccan than this. You will not find a Berber family in the night eating a burger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You will find them eating a good tagine, a decent big dish.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? You
all
eat
the
it,
flavors.
Bro. You see with all the flavors in this. So
yeah.
When you eat,
it's like a flavor explosion
exactly
in your mouth.
Exactly. When you're going to eat oil, you're going to eat like crazy good oil.
Yeah.
Honey, the same thing. When the bread is made, it's homemade. I mean, you see? And even if they have gas, they will have a tafarnout, which is this
the open fire
outside that is made from clay, and they will cook in it more often than cooking on the gas, you know?
Yeah.
So that makes the Berber mentality and the welcome. Berbers are, when you go up in the mountains, you can be in the middle of nowhere and you will meet a Berber family that maybe they don't have nothing, but if you tell them, please, I don't have nothing, I need to eat and this and that, they will give you everything. If they have one chicken there, bro, they will stand and kill it and cook it for you.
Yeah.
And knowing that they will not have anything else to eat after.
I mean, you can feel this here as well, right? It's a very hospitable area.
There you go.
People are very warm, very welcoming. It's, you know, they like to show what they have, you
exactly.
know, and you have plenty. Third take. Yes, fucking bro. Batteries overheating.
Well, the heat, bro. The heat, the sun.
I know.
Can't do nothing.
But hey, we cannot complain about the sun.
No,
like,
bro.
The weather is amazing, bro.
T-shirt,
the
come
is
on.
Amazing.
My friend are freezing up back in Europe.
I don't even know, like, we had to switch off the camera for like the last 30 minutes, so I don't even know where we were, but I think we're talked about the area, right? And I was just about to like dive into, you know, the differences between Tamrat and Tagazu, because if you come here, like, it's trippy, like how it's so close. It's essentially one big melting point, a pot, but the two towns are so different.
For sure.
Can you talk about this? Like, what, like, if you would have to like advertise Tagazu, who would it be for? If you would have to advertise Tamrat, who would that be for?
Well, let's start with Tagazut, because Tagazut,
that's what made the
is the main
place, right?
exactly is the heart. It's the main place that started it all. I mean, without Tagazut, nothing of all this will not be happening.
Right.
Okay. So, as I said, the first hippies that came, they was actually parking by Anchor Point, Mystery, La Source, you know, around that area. And they were camping at the Tagazut camping, who was right by the side of Panoramas.
Yeah, okay.
The wave.
Yep.
So the concentration of people was around there, okay? And Tagazut was a fisherman village, which means it was just boats, fishermen, and the small houses that were there, that were for fishermen that was living up in the mountain, and sometimes they used these places for just to have the gear of fishing and maybe sleeping there if they are fishing every day for a couple of days, that so that they don't have to go all the way up back to the village and down, you know? So, and it was few shops, of course, to deal with these fishermen, to sell them their daily needs, from
right.
oil to eggs to bread to, you know? And that helped even the hippies. And
gotcha.
All the surfers that came from around the world to surf in here at the time. So instead of them driving the whole way to Agadir, you know, Tagazut was close to buy everything they needed to survive and eat. And one main shop there, he had this, we're gonna say, he was different than all the other shops because he bought some special cheese, he bought some chocolate, so he bought things that normally Moroccans will not buy, the fishermen will not buy, because it's not their needs, they
yeah.
don't. So he bought these targeting the surfers.
Tourists.
And that was our first surf shop, because instead of getting paid with money, he was doing change.
Yeah, right, okay.
And that was our first surf shop where we could buy surfboards and do things. So Tagazut is the start of the surfing, is the heart. It's close even to the main breaks that everyone wanted to surf. Anchor Point, Killer Point, Mysteries and La Source, you know? So, and then you have Hash Point too, which
yep.
is like straight in Tagazut. And then you have Panoramas. So just these breaks, bro, which is like on not even a 3 kilometer, you know, it's like crazy. So that was the concentration. Then, a bit by bit, it expanded.
Yeah.
And then, our ear, it's more a bigger concentration of fishermen and farmers. Because if we call it banana village, it's because it have these big banana plantations.
Yep.
And it's not only bananas, there is many other things. So this was like the economic area when you can get all the fruits, all the veggies and everything. Tagazout was mainly fishing and surfers. So the fish and the agriculture in this area, the agriculture went really low, except for the bananas in this area. But the fish, it's what kept everyone surviving. But then Tagazout got this advantage of surfing. So started renting houses, you know, opening more shops, restaurants, whatever. And then the villages around, which is Aurir, Tamaract, even Anza, saw that, you know. And of course, each of these villages started having their own surfers and kids. And each one wanted to develop his little area, even if it's one area. But it still feels like if it's different areas, as you said, because you move from here to here and it's a completely different thing, you know? So that made a good thing for everyone because it opened for them a new door, a new possibility, a new opportunity. And, sorry, they followed. I mean, Tagazout was the leader. And all the villages just...
It's like a natural progression, right? Because
And
the more
today,
people come...
And today, strangely, it's Tamaract that have the biggest concentration of surf camps, I think, in the world, even. So,
yeah, you told me
that's
some,
crazy.
You told me a crazy number.
Yeah.
What was it, 130 or something?
Yeah. Bro, in a, like in every 100 square meter, you can find up to 2-3 surf camps, something like that, so which is, like, crazy. It's something
and it's a very small area too, so
for
this
sure.
is why this gets kind of
crowded,
more crowded by the minute.
Yeah And the promotion for the area, it's not stopping. People just like promoting more and more and more and more and more for the area. We even assisted lately for the Surf Expo we had, which is like an amazing event that helped many people to connect, because the community of surfers in Morocco, it's not connected yet 100%, you see? So this kind of events should more happen because it's not promoting for surf in one way abroad, but it's connecting more all these surfers, surf poles together so that they coordinate together and they co-rate together and they cooperate together and that there is a communication between all these guys. Because I think if they all together put one hand in hand and work together, this thing can work properly in a nice way, and you know. Because then again, as I said, I traveled around a bit and I seen in other countries where they have some rules and some that are respected by people, and that makes everything much better. You know, it looks even better if it. It looks more organized and properly done.
I have one more question for you before we wrap this up.
Yes.
What's your favorite? If you could... No, actually, I just changed the question. Let me change the question.
Yeah, for sure.
The question will be, if you could only surf one wave for the rest of your life in this area, which one would it be?
In this area.
And why?
My
See,
God!
I had a way easier question, but this one I think is.
This
better.
One is tricky. Now I need. Oh, bro, this is a tricky question. tricky one.
I'm
you
spelling.
See, you're spelling again. No
oh
stress.
Oh my God!
Tricky. Damn, bro, that's a tricky one because, I mean, if I wanna be stuck in a place, I would rather to have right and left so that I surf both waves. But then again. bro. You're killing me.
Give me your breakdown of waves and why you love to surf them. Like, why is it... Okay, give me your top three waves and why. Is that easier for you?
Yeah, that would be much easier.
Okay. Three. What? Number three. What comes in number three?
In number three? Number three, number three, number three, number three. I'm gonna say Anza.
Okay.
Because it's left right, and when it's rolling perfectly, it's really amazing. And that's a wave that I had crazy histories with. I even surfed it while not many could access to it, because it was a real heavy ghetto at the area before. And yeah, so that will be the third.
Second.
Second is just because it's not close to me. I don't surf it often, but it's one of the craziest waves that I can't talk about, because there is crazy waves that I ain't talking about.
Yeah, we're not gonna talk about
it. So, Safi.
Safi.
Because Safi, it's that's real talk. I mean, it's something special, something really good. Yeah, that one, because again, I'm from here, I grew up in here. Even if I don't surf it today as much as before, because luckily it's crowded, everyone wanna be there, everyone wanna take some pictures there, everyone wanna say that I surfed there. Of course, it's Anchor Point, because that wave still special. It's special, it have its crazy characteristics. You surf it differently, every swell, the direction, and I mean, yeah, that's the wave that was challenging me constantly. That's the wave that made me at least twice saying, God, if I come out of this situation, I will stop surfing and I will never go back again.
And you've been back since.
And of course, I came back again to it. Of course. That wave, I respect it like hell, because, I mean, it have sections. People that knows about Anchor Point have three sections. The first one, shouldn't fall. If you fall, just get ready for some kicking. Second section, it's all fun, and then the third section down, that's a heavy one too. I mean, or you engage yourself in barrels and make it out properly, or you engage yourself and then you are like, shit.
Man.
Yeah, but yeah. So this is the three ones I can't talk about and that everyone knows about.
And we keep the secrets a secret.
The secrets are secret. Okay? What happened to Vegas stays in Vegas.
Exactly. Exactly. It's been real, man.